Today on the Breakdown Poker Podcast with the Poker Guys. There's two left in EPT Barcelona, and millionaires will be minted in this event. In fact, one could argue they already have been. One could argue they haven't. You could make, you know, it's a debate. You could make arguments. We'll hear your arguments. But this is the show where we don't mess around anymore. We don't just make jokes to make jokes. We don't have flights of fancy. We get to the poker now. That's who we are. That's who we've become. We are a fully formed selves, no longer inchoate. And as such, we will talk about this EPT Barcelona hand, which is pretty interesting, pretty fascinating. And yes, of course, six figures of money is on the line, because of course it is. Millionaires will be minted on the Breakdown with Grant Dennison and Jonathan Levy.
Hey, are we minting them? Have we minted them?
I would mint someone.
I will mint somebody too, but that could mean a lot of things.
What else could it mean?
Well, you get a thin mint. Yep. And you just huck it at somebody.
Okay, that would be minting someone. Yeah. That's one.
I'm going to mint you later. I've just decided. I'm bringing thin mints next time.
Fine, I don't care.
They're pretty good.
They are not bad.
Yeah, so what do you think about deal making in general in tournaments?
Before we get to that, so before we started the podcast, Grant said, so remember, we have our Just Go With The Podcast, so that's where the only jokes we're going to make are about poker, not the other stuff. And then who immediately goes into the definitions of minting? It's you, sucker. It's you.
I took 20 seconds on it.
I know. You got on pretty quick. But I had to point it out that you're a hypocrite.
Sure.
Okay. Sorry.
But this is a poker fucking podcast, and that's what the people want and what the reviews complain about.
Some of the reviews do complain about
this. So we will get to the hand soon, but first I want to talk about deal making in poker tournaments.
Great.
Because this is a huge poker tournament, one of the biggest on the calendar every year, the EPT Barcelona main event. Over 2,000 entries.
Yeah.
And with three players remaining, they made a deal where they all got a flat payout with 109K extra for the winner.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a huge amount of money that you're dealing with, because they're all made $1 million, right?
Well, there were three of them, and the third place guy actually only ended up with 900,000 and change. The other two guys got over $1 million. Because they did it somewhat ICM based.
Yeah, they did an ICM. So, okay.
So Simon, Witsiak, who was the chip leader at the time and is going to be in this hand, had the most chips. So he started with like 1.1 million as his flat payout. The next guy also got around that amount as well, Seidenstreicher. You told me I was going to get it wrong.
Yep.
You were right. Yeah, they both ended up with, actually, Seidenstreicher even got a little bit more, it looks like, on the deal, a little bit more. But then, of course, they're playing for this last 109,000.
Right, so it's a significant amount of money.
Yes.
Witsiak is apparently like a online grinder type based on a few things that we looked up and the way the announcer talks about him.
Yes.
I think Seidenstreicher is not that. At least we haven't heard, like the announcer didn't talk about him like that. And we haven't heard or seen anything like that.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. But in a spot, like, let's imagine a dream spot where you get to a spot like this. Let's say it's the Monster Stack or whatever, a tournament you would actually play.
Oh, okay.
And the Monster Stack, except it's not run by the World Series of Poker with its arcane rules
about deal making. It's the WPT
Monster Stack.
Yeah. Or whatever, EPT Monster Stack.
Or maybe something that's the equivalent of the Monster Stack that's going to happen in the December Win Series thing that's now going on.
Sure. Where they just like, of course you can make a deal. We don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how do you approach that if there's three left? Let's say you are the player with 45 blinds, there's a player with 15 blinds, and there's a player with 30 blinds.
Oh, okay.
So how are you approaching the deal-making process once it gets brought up? And I guess beyond that, would you bring it up?
I think the first question you have to ask yourself is, how life-changing is this money that I might be about to win, potentially? Like, if we were to do a deal versus not do a deal.
Let's say that you're in this scenario. I don't know what third originally was, but let's just say it was like
guess.
650.
Yeah.
950 like and 1.4.
It was going to be about third in this case, actually would be a, okay, let's say those are the, who cares? Let's say this 650, 950, 1.4. So there's a huge difference. If we make a deal, we're all going to get around 900,000 to a million. So we're going to protect ourselves to the tune of like $250,000 to $350,000. Right?
If you leave extra money on the side.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So again, it really depends on your own personal financial situation. I think if you're Bill Perkins, you should have no interest in doing a deal unless they're giving away the farm to you.
Well, sure. But let's say you're anybody with less than $5 million.
Okay. I think then the questions I'm going to ask myself are, what do I think, as realistically as I can be, my actual EV in this event is as of right now? I think that's question one. Right? Yeah. Like, am I better than these guys? Am I worse than these guys? Obviously, our chip stack matters too, and that's part of the EV. But part of it is also a skill-based thing here, right? And if you're up, like, if I'm up against Phil Ivey and Patrick Antonius, it's going to be really different than I'm up against, you know, Hector and Jim from down the street, right? It's really, it's
those
a
guys
deal.
Are really bad.
I mean, the tournaments that you and I play in, it isn't that often when we get down to the final five that we're like, wow, these guys are really good.
Yeah.
It's not that it never happens, but it's pretty rare, right?
Yeah.
So often I look around and I'm like, I'm pretty sure I'm the best player left, or me and that guy are clearly the two best players left.
Right.
We're not surprising. We put a lot more time into this than most people. So that's going to really affect how I make a deal or not make a deal in these spots. So those are the two things, though, I think. Like, how important is this money? If the money's very important, I'm going to lean towards making a deal, I think, because, you know, let's lock up important money. I think that's a little more important than, like, I'm willing to give up a few EV points to lock up what would be, like, a life-changing amount of extra money.
I have a counterpoint to this.
Great.
I think it's, unless you are Bill Perkins or like similarly rich,
yeah,
I think it almost always makes sense to make the deal.
Oh.
If you're operating outside of from a poker bankroll and trying to operate as a poker professional in some capacity, one way or the other, because it is so rare to get to a spot like this, and it's almost just like devastating to not realize your expected value in a spot like this for the course of your poker winnings throughout time. And I think establishing a higher floor is pretty nice. And I think in the moment, especially, but even now as I'm talking about it, it's very difficult for me to assess the difference in my life that it would be between 650K and 1.4 million. Like, I don't know if I can accurately say what's the difference.
Think about it, though. Like, you're paying taxes on that, right?
Yeah.
So that 650K is not 650K. It's like 400K. 1.4 million is like 900,000.
Yeah.
So think about that. What's the difference between you in real money between 400,000 and 900,000? Obviously 500K, but think about how that affects your life. I think those feel like very different amounts. They do to me.
Yeah, they do. They do. So I think I think just out of general caution and to reduce variance, because poker tournaments are structured to have these super high top prizes, and I don't agree with the structures.
Of course.
I typically don't agree with it. So if I can restructure it, unless I have just an incredible edge to the second part of your thing, if it's like an incredible edge where I'm like, I know these players, I've played with them before, they are fucking awful.
Yeah.
And I have them covered. Like, I'm going to win so often here.
Right.
Like, then maybe I don't make the deal.
I mean, I think part of what you should be doing, though, is you should only be making deals that feel like they're good for you. So if you can make a deal past what you think your EV is, then you should pretty much always take that deal, right?
Yeah.
So you're like, oh, they're offering me more than I think they should be offering me, or, you know, if based on our skill and based on our chip stacks, great. Then I think that's fine to take that deal. And in fact, you probably should. In fact, you should. I will say, as a counterpoint to your counterpoint.
Oh, double counterpoint.
Double counterpoint time. While you're rarely going to have an opportunity to play for this much money, and so to lock that up has value, the other side of it is you're rarely going to have an opportunity to play for this much money, and so going for all of it also has value, especially if you think you have a skill edge.
Yeah.
Right? Like, this may be the only time you get to play for this much money where you have a clear skill edge. Like, the next time you're playing for $450,000, Patrick Antonius may be the other guy. He isn't this time. Like, holy shit. This is incredible. You
it's
know?
Just such a it's such a stressful thing, even though you're obviously elated to be in this position. It's such a stressful thing.
Of course it is.
Like, so this is going to sound like some self-help guru bullshit, but sometimes I like talk to myself a little bit when I'm doing any sort of exercise to, like, you know, like I do a lot of this is my life now, just like getting used to it. Mm. But when I do runs, I run pretty hard and it sucks by the end. And I tell myself, and this is the self-help guru bullshit, and I didn't get this from anybody. I just started telling myself every run, I only have one chance to finish strong. So, like, I only have one chance to finish strong on this run. I won't get that opportunity again.
Hmm.
And I have to go through that entire fucking run again in order to have the opportunity to finish strong.
Yeah.
Right? So this is a much higher leverage version of that, right? You've gone through the very difficult exercise of getting here. You only have one opportunity to get it right. And the decisions that you make throughout poker, those are almost in a way predetermined compared to this other negotiating decision, because you are the poker player that you are, but you're not commonly negotiating for six figures,
yeah,
right? So you only have one opportunity to finish strong in this poker tournament. And how do you make that decision?
Right.
You know, I think it's very difficult.
I mean, this comes back to the more realistic you can be about your actual EV, the easier it is to make these decisions, right?
Yeah.
Like, I would never... Okay, at these price points, I might take a slightly worse deal for myself, actually. If we're talking about, like, they're like, we're going to give you $1 million right now, and it's $350,000 more than what third place is.
Yeah.
And you only have... Okay, you have half the chips in play, but... Guess what? You have 45 blinds.
Right.
And your actual EV is $1,050,000. I'd probably take the million. I'd be like, I might push for a little bit, but in the back of my head, I'd be like, yeah, I'm always going to take that $1 million. Like, I just, $350K is too much to give up. Like, I'm just not going to give that up. Right.
Right.
So there is that. But deciding what your actual EV is will help you make a good deal. And I've been at many, many final tables, as have you, where deals have been discussed and made. And one thing I used to be the guy who was like a little desperate to make deals back in the day, you know, and I was like, I remember sort of, I cringe looking back on this, you know, but like being at like, whatever, $500 sit and goes at the World Series and we're three-handed actually, I remember this with Ronnie Barta was actually at that table.
Oh, yeah.
I remember the three of us made a deal.
5 years in a row, he cashed in the main event.
Yeah.
It's a record.
Yeah. Nice guy. And and we got to 300. We started talking about making a deal. And I remember I gave up the money to make sure the deal happened. No one asked me to even, because like we were all talking about what was fair, and one guy wanted a little more money.
That's embarrassing.
And I just like offered it because I wanted the fucking deal so bad. Yeah. And I look at that. I'm like, Jesus, dude, come on, come on.
Everybody's there at some point.
Yeah, of course, right. But so like I'm not that person anymore. And then I became the person who was like, oh, I'm never going to take less than what I'm worth ever, which is a good floor.
Yeah.
It's a good default position. At some point that turned to, I want to play things out mostly. Like it's good experience to play things out.
Yeah.
So I pretty much never bring up deals anymore. Like I've been at lots of relatively big-ish final tables.
Well, you've never been
not like
in a spot like this.
No, but we're like first place is like whatever, 30K and there's four of us left type thing, you know? And I'm like, and just no one brings up a deal and we just keep playing kind of a thing. Like that's like pretty normal, I would say. But also, so to me, it's like either my unless we're talking about this kind of money, my general approach to deal making. So this is more like the kinds of things people are going to actually run into, as opposed to this more fantasy thing, which may happen once in their life and maybe zero. Is either I have to get more than what I think I'm worth, or we're just going to play it out, like because the experience is good.
Yeah,
it's a really good experience to do this. And to learn to not be moved by the money at all.
Right.
And like, I think we're both pretty good at that. Like,
yeah.
I'm always willing to like call off if I think it's right in all these spots. Mm-hmm. And I'm not worried about, oh, it's going to cost me this many thousands of dollars if I'm wrong or if this or if that. This is clearly the right play I'm making at the end.
Yeah.
You know? If you're at this much money, I mean, are you different than me? Would you give up a little bit of equity to lock in that money? You sort of implied that at one point with your counterpoint. That you would.
I mean, this is a subjective equity, right? That you're basing on your skill versus the other
players.
Because I think we're not going to take less than our ICM in this deal.
Well, that would be let's say you're up against two guys who are a little bit worse than you, but not a lot worse, but clearly a little bit worse. Your ICM is $1,050,000. They're like, we're going to give you $1 million right now. You wouldn't take it? That's the question.
Well, if they give me $1 million, but we're also playing for an extra six figures.
Yeah, we're playing for another 100K. Sure.
Yeah, I think I would take that deal. No, I'm not talking about my total ICM, but my ICM once we subtract the amount that we're keeping on the side.
Yeah.
Oh, no,
I'm saying you're giving up $50,000 of your current ICM value.
No, I'm not doing that.
You're not doing that. Okay,
no.
So you're always saying at least your ICM, even at the bigger money amounts.
Right, but what I'm saying is, like, do you accept the ICM deal or not? I'm not saying do you, like, lose money versus your opponents in ICM because you're afraid. I'm not saying that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying if the deal is offered like these guys did, where you actually get your ICM, then you play for some on the side.
That seems very reasonable to
me. Yeah. Like, would you prefer that versus playing it out is the question.
I would, because like you, I think tournaments are weirdly structured with the prize pools. I think it's super strange, for example, for Daniel Wyman to make something like 15% of the entire main event prize pool when there were like 10,000 entries. I don't know why that would be. It makes no sense to me. I don't like the top-heavy nature of these things. I understand that's how they are, and it probably benefits me that they're like this, but I still don't really think it's right. And it incentivizes a particular play style, which I'm willing to do. It's fine with me, But I don't really love that so much can happen on the turn of a card, essentially, which is the way it goes a lot. You know, who's going to get lucky at the final table often will determine, you know, who gets the biggest prize or who gets a much bigger prize than they otherwise would. And that's fine, but it's not ideal.
Joe Catta, for example.
Yeah, Joe Catta, who like three times like basically was set under set and got there.
Yeah.
You know, at the final table. And like, good for him. And he's obviously a great player. And
of course.
All of that. But like, you know, then maybe first place shouldn't be so much if it's that easy to like, in some ways, pull it off. I mean, that easy is a weird thing.
I mean,
you know what I mean? Like, you know, you get it in as a solid favorite and you lose a lot because that's poker. It's gambling ultimately. So
I keep going back to what the Party Poker Millions Tour did for a little while and then stopped doing, where once you got to nine handed, every pay jump was the same.
Yeah.
From ninth to first.
I mean, I think that's really cool.
I wish they would, like, then you wouldn't have to worry about these types of deals. It's fine.
Yep. ICM is just not in play. You get to play poker for real. ICM makes poker less interesting, not more interesting.
100% agree. It's like, just like an advantage if you know how to apply it, but
right.
That's just like stuff that gives you an edge is not the same thing as stuff that's good for the game.
Right.
You know?
Absolutely.
So yeah, I think we're in agreement that we would, in a spot like this, make an ICM
deal. I'd be happy to make an ICM deal here and play for the extra 100K.
Because you're still playing for significant fucking money. You're very rarely going to get the opportunity if like this 5K buy-in, or if you're in the monster stack, a $1,500 buy-in is among the biggest tournament buy-ins you ever play. 109K is often not going to be in play anyway, like whenever you play a tournament. So it's still a huge amount of money. Yeah. It just doesn't feel the same because you feel elated to have locked up effectively seven figures.
Right.
Yeah. But that 109K, a couple months down the line, you're like, it would be nice to have an extra 109K.
There also is an advantage sometimes in making a deal at these spots, you know, at final tables, where you leave money left over if it's a significant amount, because people play differently then too. There's like a looseness often where they get too loose. They go the other way most of the time, you know? So like, if you know that, like, things could be great. You know, you might be able to pick that up more often than you should as a result to that extra 100.
So it's an interesting type of deal that gets made relatively frequently, but where these guys have established a floor and then they are playing for no difference between third and second. And then second and first is 109K difference.
Right.
And third is also 109K difference with first. So we don't know what the three-handed play was like, but I imagine the three-handed play was, and I think justifiably, much looser than heads-up play. Like, and much, much more willy-nilly than heads-up play, because when you're three-handed and first place is the only pay jump, like, you are incentivized to try to go into heads-up with a big chip advantage, right? So you could make a little bit more high-variance plays.
I mean, I think you're incentivized just to, in both cases, you're just playing for first place, right? So So when there's three left, you maybe you're slightly looser, you're slightly more going for it because there's another person to get through.
I mean, your call off range has changed significantly versus if there was no deal made.
Of course. That's the ICM thing, right?
Yeah, you're three handed.
Of course. But you know, past that.
So I think these guys probably had this like loosey-goosey feel like, okay, I'm going to call off with the GTO proper ranges and like do everything without considering ICM. And then they get back to heads up and they're like, oh shit, I'm playing for six figures. There's a bit of a puckering there, perhaps, as far as not tightness, but just like the feeling, the vibe.
I don't know. If you've already pocketed $1.1 million, which both these guys have.
Yeah.
It's less than 10%.
Right.
So it's like you're playing for six figures, but it's also only six figures. It's only baby six figures. Well,
it depends on how you want to think about it, right?
Yep,
because you could think about it as it's only 10% of what I've already made, which is a very easy and common way to think about it. Or you could be thinking about it as that's like a different thing. I've already made that.
That's true.
Just playing this fucking guy heads up for 100K right now.
That is absolutely correct. It just is it the 100K doesn't feel as... Okay, both these guys, Hendons, are shockingly unimpressive.
Although Witsiak is apparently like an online grinder. Antoine Saoud, like... progeny person.
Yeah, something like that. He's at least coached by him and they know each other. And Witsiak.
Like, I'm at
Witsiak's end.
It's
okay.
Amazing. Is his name Patrick? Isn't everybody's name Patrick to you?
Why do you say
that? You were calling everybody Patrick for a while.
I don't know what you're talking
about. Yeah, you do.
So Witsiak is at least an online grinder, is what they say. They don't say like he's an online legend in all the reports.
I mean, he's mentored by Antoine Saoud, so that's something.
Again, he might be coached by Antoine Saoud.
Yeah, that's
which
true.
Which is really different.
He might pay Antoine Saoud for coaching.
Especially like when he made the final table, the last two tables, he may like, hey, you want to coach me and I'll give you some piece of my winnings.
That's fair.
It's hard to know.
Yeah.
When there's this much money up front, a lot of these guys are getting coached.
Now, the commentator, who I don't know who it is, did say during the course of this hand, a player of Witsiak's level, which like inferring that he was a very high level player. And that might just be the commentator blowing smoke, but it might mean something. I don't know.
I mean, the commentators watched him play for a while too. Yeah. So maybe he just is very impressed with Witsiak.
Yeah, could be.
But fair enough. Like, he's probably got the most experience of these two guys.
Yeah.
He looks like a poker pro.
A Euro pro specifically.
Big time.
A guy who makes a 5-10 game break when he sits down at the win because all the Americans are like, we had 2 euros, now we got a third one. We can't do it anymore. Sorry, guys.
Fuck it, yeah. Yeah. I'm just going to go get dinner.
Yeah, he's that guy. And Seidenstreicher is like a nothing Hendon also, right?
Oh, even less so than Witsiak. Seidenstreicher has 20,000 in his Hendon coming into this. Witsiak, to be fair, has 100,000 in his Hendon coming into this. So like both of them, very, very small. Now, Witsiak had just transitioned to playing live tournaments just before this. Apparently, he started playing live tournaments in April 2022. That's his first Hendon.
So 100K over that time is pretty impressive.
It's not too bad. And they're all relatively small buy-in events. The biggest one is a $3,500 Wynn Summer Classic, which he finished 150th in. But his biggest cash has been actually just before this in the main event, he made 45K. And before that, there was like a few like, you know, a $17,000 cash and a $10,000.
He's probably pretty good.
Oh, no, I'm sure he is. I'm sure he is.
We don't know anything about Seidenstreicher. He could be an online guy, too. I think Brazil has pretty robust online poker
indeed
situation going on. He's from Brazil, if that wasn't clear. Anyway, this hand was suggested by Chris Jones.
Yep.
The Minnesota guy.
Myth.
The Minnesota monster.
The Minnesota Viking.
Yeah.
Timberwolf.
He's a Timberwolf. All right, Timberwolf.
He's nice. A Timberwolf.
He's a Timberwolf. He is...
V-E. Wolf.
He's the singular plural.
Thank you.
That is a good nickname.
That is incredible, actually. You're
Chris
welcome.
Chris Jones, you have a new nickname, the singular plural.
Yeah, it's hard if you don't have context for it, I think, but it's weird. It's very weird.
It sounds like some sort of entity from a Marvel movie or something.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Like Thor went to visit the Singular Pearl to try and have them, you know, bring his daughter back to life or something. Yeah.
Yeah, something like that.
Anyway.
All right, we're at 200K, 400K for the blinds.
Okay.
We have pretty even stacks here. Seidenstreicher has 29.7 million and Witsiak has 33 million. So they're relatively deep stacks and very even. So there's still a lot of play available here.
Great.
Seidenstreicher has Queen of Hearts, 10 of Clubs on the button / small blind. Opens to 1.1 million. Hard to argue with that play.
Yeah, I'm okay with it, bro.
Witsiak, with his 33 million covering Seidenstreicher, has 6-5 of clubs in the big blind. What's your preferred action, or what's your mix? Because you're never folding.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Let's see here. We're about 75 blinds effective. I think we're mostly calling, but we're definitely 3-betting this to some degree, like you're implying. Maybe 20 to 25% of the time it's a 3-bet, something like that.
So one of the 6-5 suited combos, basically?
Yeah. I think like, diamonds. And the rest are calls. That sounds about right to me. What do you think?
Sure. So are you just doing like 20% of all reasonable suited connectors, maybe 6-5 plus suited connectors?
It would also depend probably a little bit on how much I've been 3-betting in the last 10 hands, honestly. If I've been 3-betting a lot, if I've been getting 3-betting hands, I might not push a hand like this that calls so beautiful to make a call with when we're this deep.
Right.
And would hate to get blown off it when it can really bust somebody.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I do like this as a 3-betting hand heads up. And I'm not a big like heads up theory guy. I haven't studied deeply heads up theory. But my hit when thinking about it is that the ace wheel suited type hands, which are the very popular light side 3-bets in full ring games, are more powerful as calls in heads up. And these hands are more powerful as 3-bets.
Because ace high is powerful enough.
Yeah, ace high is powerful enough. And this gives us board coverage, which we're seeking with the ace wheel suiteds. And this can give us similar board coverage.
You get some of that there too. Yeah. That's true. I mean, you should probably have a little bit of ace wheel suited anyway in your heads up 3-betting range. But that's a fair point. I mean, also, depending on how much people are raising to, like, this is a 3X. If people are min raising, which at least in the back in the day, heads up, there'd be a reasonable amount of that. You can just call more of the time because it's so cheap, you know.
I mean, this is
less to win.
This is a 2.5X, isn't it?
It raises to 1.1. It's almost a full, it's 2.75.
Yeah, 2.75.
It's almost a full 3X.
Yeah.
And that's, it's probably right to do when your head's up because you're getting called so much, right?
Yeah.
But still, like, that makes me want to three bet a little more because there's more to pick up.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So at this stack depth, what are you three betting to? Because Wojciech does three
bet.
Oh,
great. Oh, he does.
Yeah.
I did not know that. What am I three betting to? I'm three betting to, like 3.5 to 3.8 million. What did he do?
Wojciech goes 4 million, which I like. Okay. I like better. I like that better. I think that, you know, with the advantage of position and this stack depth and the loosey goosey feel of having locked up seven figures.
That's a good reason to go bigger. The loosey goosey feel. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're going to get a lot of insta folds at my amount too, though. Like, just like,
well, sure. When he's opening like Jack seven off.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
like
all that.
Shit. Yeah. Yeah. But I want to be able to fold out some slightly better hands than Jack seven off. Yeah.
Like, what do you think you're going to fold out at 4 million that you're not going to fold out at 3.6 to 3.
You said 3. You said 3.5.
I said 3.5 to 3.8 is actually what I said.
Well, I'm going to take the low end of that.
Fine. Take the low end. What do you think you're folding out differently at 4?
8, 10 off.
For one more blind? Really?
Yes.
I think it's probably the same either way.
It's 8, 10 off. That's the one.
Okay. All right. Whatever. This is all not a big
deal. Maybe you should have made it 4.5. Then we're talking.
Yeah.
Then we're talking. I mean, do you feel like it's an obvious slam dunk call with the Queen 10?
Yes.
For Seed and Streaker?
Absolutely.
What about a 4 bet?
Feels too ambitious where this feels like this should be squarely in our calling range, doesn't it?
Like, what about a min click 4 bet?
Why would we do that?
To fuck with the dials, man. We're only playing for 100K. Who cares?
That is the best reason. Like, let's do it with no fold equity.
Yeah.
I mean, like, if we're going to raise, we need to raise with fold equity.
Then we min bet the flop.
Right. Of course. This is what Grant does when we play our like $10 heads up games after we busted in World Series events. And we're back at our place, right?
Yeah. I fuck with the dials. Kind of yeah.
So much. And I'm just there trying to play like GTO against them and hang on.
You always win.
Well, you know, but you know, you have a good story. You're like, yeah, but I'm the creative one. And I'm like, yep.
Yeah.
You owe me $10.
Yeah.
So anyway, I think mostly this is probably not a pure call, but nearly a pure call is my guess. That this is like if we're four betting, we probably want to have more significant blockers than a queen and a ten in our hand.
Yeah,
a bluff.
I agree. Seed and Streaker agrees too. He calls.
I'd much rather have like king five suited, honestly, to four bet.
Sure.
Anyway,
he calls.
Mm-hmm.
You're gonna have to call a dermatologist because your elbows are gonna be so dry that you're gonna need dermatology.
Yeah,
from the nitro betting, the dry elbows.
You've really messed this up. Nitro betting does have a new lotion.
Oh,
it's the nitro lotion.
I'm. You said you really messed this up as if you had something amazing to say.
No, no, no.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm just
like I missed some obvious pun or something.
Oh no. It's the lotion of nitro, you know? I'm trying to turn into a word, but I'm struggling, like locomotion. But how would I get lotion into there that makes a local lotion? Local lotion, because it's crazy lotion for your crazy elbows, you ugly sons of bitches.
Anyway, break out that old white pages, because you're going to want a really old dermatologist who has not yet entered the internet age and really knows what they're doing with elbows. Because in the 70s, man, there were a lot more elbow dryness issues.
I still have some.
Everybody knows about that. You're not going to have that issue anymore once you start with that nitro lotion, which comes in the form of sports betting, casino games, and poker on nitro betting. It's NFL season.
Yes.
Get in there.
Don't be afraid.
Put some money on the Colts.
Are you afraid?
Put some money on the Jaguars.
Are you trembling?
Put some money on the
Jets.
Yeah.
Go ahead. It's okay. They're going to get another quarterback. It'll
right.
be fine. By the time you hear this, Tom Brady is probably their quarterback.
It's possible.
It's fine.
It's possible. And you can bet that on nitro betting. I don't know. Futures markets, maybe they have that.
I mean, yeah.
Okay.
Sure. You can do like, you know, to win the division or win the AFC.
No, I'm talking about Tom Brady being on the Jets.
Oh, I don't think you can do that.
Okay.
Although they may do a special thing for that, actually, the Jets quarterbacking stuff.
Yeah. You can also play poker, of course. Casino games. There's other sports too, but everybody likes betting the NFL.
Yes. Well, except the people who bet like football, also known as soccer, which is actually the most popular sport to bet in the world. Grant.
Field hockey probably has some betting on there. I think there is a field hockey section. I would not know how to bet it. I don't know where the edge is, but maybe you do.
I mean, someone does.
Yeah. And nitro betting is for you.
That's your place. Get in there and curl up like it's a sleeping bag.
The important part is that you have to use the link in the show notes of this podcast when you sign up, or you don't get access to our cool shit that sometimes happens.
You really need to use the link. It costs you nothing, but gets you things. It actually basically pays you to use the link. It's crazy. Here's money. That's the link.
Yeah, it's like it's exactly like that. Yeah. Nitro betting, get in there.
Back to the hand.
Get paid. All right. So we've got the 6-5 of clubs for Witsiak. He 3-bet out of the big blind preflop. Siden Streaker has queen 10 off.
Yeah.
The flop is 9 of clubs, 5 of diamonds, deuce of hearts.
Sure.
Pretty good. Pretty good for Witsiak. He's got the multiple backdoors with middle pair.
Yeah.
Siden Streaker just has 2 overs with backdoor straight draw. It's okay.
It's okay.
You must protect your equity as Witsiak on this board.
Yeah, yeah. It seems weird to... If we had like queen jack and it was king queen X, we don't have to protect because there's only the ace.
Would
be a big changing card. But there's so many cards that would kill us and we don't know where we are.
There's also a lot of cards that when we get called, we can continue on the turn where we pick up equity against hands that have us beat, stuff like that.
Yep.
What are the boards that you don't see bet as Witsiak? Because... You know, you're kind of going down a path once you 3-bet 6 high that is going to be a lot of C bets. Like you're gonna C bet dry ace high boards, dry king high boards,
guaranteed. I think
most dry boards in general.
I think your jack 10 8 type board, especially with no clubs,
That's
is like a give up.
Exactly what board. I was thinking. Yeah,
stuff along the jack 10 3.
Yeah,
even if there's one club, we might just give up sometimes. Like, cool, we have a backdoor flush draw, and like I guess we have 2 backdoors. Maybe we can see about that.
What about 8-9 queen where we have a gut shot, but it kind of sucks?
No, I don't think we should. I think we should just not get involved.
Yeah.
Like, we can just murder ourselves when the 7 comes, right?
Yeah.
Who wants to do that?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess jack 10's already there, but so. Cool. We can get in a spot where we have to pay it off. You know?
Right.
I think it's just check fold there a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. But this feels like a board that just for the purpose of equity denial feels like a C bet, whereas dry ace high boards feel like a range-based bluff board.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think any like Broadway dry, like one Broadway card, like Jack 4 deuce, I guess that's a gutter for us. Jack deuce deuce is that kind of thing is an easy C bet too.
Yeah.
And honestly, most paired boards are pretty easy C bets most of the time.
Yep. Maybe not Jack Jack 10.
No, right. And not like 9-9-8.
Yeah.
Especially, I mean, we have a gutter there, so maybe it's a bad one. 10-10-9 with no clubs
or
stuff, shit like that. Yeah.
So how do you want to size it?
Okay.
8.4 in the pot.
8.4 in the pot. We had made it 4 million. I mean, I know how much he bets, so I'm trying to like get that out of my head. I think I would go a little more than he did. So I know he bets 3 million, right? I think I would bet like 3.8.
Yeah, I was thinking 4, maybe even 4.5. Yeah. Like, our main value here is equity denial.
Right.
This is a one-off. We don't need to balance against this guy. Right? Like, we're not going to play that many hands in this configuration against this person in our life, right? You know, where we 3-bet and then have to C-bet on a board like this. It probably will not happen again, right? So balance is completely irrelevant.
Yeah, we should just try and win this pot.
So I think equity denial and information gathering are the most important things we have here.
The question is, can we actually deny much equity at, well, at 3 million... Maybe at 4.5 million we can.
Yeah, right? That's why I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah. Because like I would think at 3 million, for example, like a hand like queen 10 is probably calling. Maybe even at 3.8, like I came up with, probably queen 10 is calling, which means all the overs are calling.
Two overs in the good back door.
Yeah, yeah. Like, but like so king queen's calling for there too, and probably most of the big ace highs are calling. Like ace 10 is probably calling because it's a good ace high, right?
Yeah, I think 4.5 gets it done against some of those hands.
Maybe. What are we really like targeting hands mostly like when we bet 3 million, like 10-8 suited, 10-7 suited, shit like that, right? It's just not a lot. King 3 suited.
Yeah.
Hands like that. So there's some, but not a lot.
That's yeah. I mean, fold. We get to keep the lead in the hand.
Yeah.
You know, that can be useful as what's his name knows, the guy who we think is always
Sean
betting.
Winter.
Sean Winter. Yeah. He's Sean Wintering.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if that's what's going on.
I don't know either.
I like a bigger size here. I do.
Yeah.
I think we're still going to get called by any deuce that.
Oh yeah, any pair has. Calling.
If he has pocket threes, pocket fours, he's going to call.
Yeah.
You know, so we're still getting value out of those hands when we bet bigger.
A little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit.
And we're probably not getting two streets anyway out of those hands.
And if we get raised, gets weird right away if we get raised.
It's weird no matter what we size it.
Yes, that's right.
So, I mean, I think if we bet $4.5 million, we could maybe more comfortably fold.
Hmm. Interesting point.
Because I don't think Sign Streaker is raising with like ace five, but he might raise a nine. Just he's like, we're heads up, let's get it in.
I mean, he might raise a nine and he might raise like gutters. Right?
Yeah.
Like that's really the deal.
Yeah. And we block gutters with our six. Which is not great.
Yeah.
Anyway, Woodsyak bets 3 million. It can't be that bad, but I think I prefer bigger sizing.
Okay.
You think this is a slam dunk always call for Sign Streaker with this stack depth, two overs and a gut shot? Two overs and a backdoor?
On this board, yes. Straight like this draw. Is the kind of board where our opponent may have a lot of give ups on the turn, like a lot, right? He's got ace king. He bets, we call. I don't know. Is he going to check call brick turns? Like, depending on how we size it, maybe he might just throw it away. It doesn't have to be ace king. Could be a lot of aces that he just, you know, just ace highs. Does he want to play a big pot against us? I think we're supposed to call.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. And that's what Sign Streaker does.
Position is really nice here.
It is really nice. 14.4 million in the pot.
Okay.
Turn is the four of spades. It's a great card for Woodsyak in that no overs come in. That's
true.
Probably most important.
Ace four, we're beating, which we already were, but we continue to beat.
Ace three gets there, unfortunately. Okay. But yeah.
6-3 gets there.
6-3 is probably not there in the first place.
We also block it.
Yeah.
6-3 suited.
Going to call the 3-bet preflop?
In position, this 70 blinds deep, I think, probably. Heads up. We're only playing for 100K. Loosey-goosey time, baby.
Yeah, it's only six figs. I think it's possible. It's only six figs, man.
I think it's possible.
It's possible, but I wouldn't give it 100%.
Okay.
And, of course, it gives Woodsyak a gut shot as well.
Yes. So this is a reasonable... This is one of the better cards, really. There aren't that... Often when I'm when we're playing now, we're playing all these bomb pots, everyone, right? All these, like, weird mixed game bomb pots. Me and Grant, we're playing these cash games. And I find myself a lot of time where I bet the flop with a hand that is good right now, but as I get called in three spots, I'm always like, there are very few good turn cards for me, you know? So when I get a card that's pretty good for me, I usually continue, where I'm just like, I mean, there's like 15% of the deck that against this many people that I feel like I can still maybe have the best hand. I better fire, like, because I can't hit it. I can't hope to hit another brick, you know?
Right.
So I fire again, and even when I'm not always sure if I definitely have the best hand, where I'm just like, I can't let everyone get there. So this is not exactly the same, but this is a great card for
us. This is quite different, because everybody has five cards in their hand.
Of course. No. But I'm just saying, like, we should be really happy about this card, even though it doesn't improve us, except giving us a gut.
Does that mean to you that it's a slam dunk bet?
We don't have to bet it, because we could go into... We could start to define the hand, actually, by check calling a little bit.
I mean, we don't really define the hand.
We don't define shit.
No, that's just like he floated and
That's
what we're hoping he floated.
We're defining our hand more than we're defining his hand, actually. If we the one problem with betting is we're not strong enough to withstand, like we might be in a game theory disaster thing. We'd still be in sort of equity denial if we bet again, right?
Well,
that's what we'd be doing.
Ace four is right. The one we can get called by ace four.
And deuces and pocket threes.
4-6 suited.
Yep. There's a few things that can call us.
Yeah.
But mostly we're in equity denial if we bet again, aren't we? Like, we're trying to fold out those overcard hands, which called once, which is an okay thing to do.
Yeah.
You know what? I think I like a bet again. I don't hate a bet at all here.
Yeah.
Like, a nine has us kind of screwed. It already did.
Yeah.
We're check calling anyway. We're not folding if we check, so...
Well, the advantage of check calling is if Sign Streaker has a lot of hands like Queen 10 in his range that are going... I mean, which, if Woodsyak checks, Sign Streaker needs to bet those hands, right?
Yes, he does.
Yeah.
That is true. We get to pick off a bluff there more of the time, but we also then are giving up the equity of what is now a kind of bloated pot.
Yeah.
We could just win this, you know, this is a 3-bet pot with a C bet in there now. Like, it's 14.4 million. We started with, it's almost half the stack, the effective stack of, you know, Sign Streaker when we started the hand. Like, that's not bad. We're going to pick off 25% of his stack here if we just get him to fold right now. That's pretty good.
It is. I think the reason to check is the board texture and the ranges. Like, this is not supposed to be our card.
No, it's not. No. If we bet, we're repping a better hand than we have if we bet, which is one of the problems.
Yeah.
We're essentially repping like ace nine plus if we bet, right? King nine.
Yeah,
fine. Maybe even queen nine too, but whatever. We're repping top pair plus.
Yeah.
And it's a little weird when we have a slightly worse hand than that. We can put ourselves in some very odd situations by betting, right? because we're heads up, it makes me a little more open to not worrying about that, I think, where we can sometimes get value and sometimes fold out. There's, the good things can happen by betting, but it would really suck to game theory disaster ourselves, which we could start to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't hate folding out 7-8 hands like that.
Right.
I don't think I want to fold out queen 10 right now. I want him to take his shot. You know, I have so much of the equity, so I'm happy with that.
Yeah.
I really could see going either way on this.
I think you can make a case either way.
Yeah. Woodsiak goes with a check.
Okay. It's cool.
All right. Now you're side of the streak and you're like, God damn it.
Well, no, you're not. You're like, good. No, I'm going to win this pot a lot.
But what I mean is, you're like, now I have to actually follow through on this thing. I have to do this plan now.
You should be happy when that happens, because otherwise, why are you calling the flop?
Yeah, I know.
Like, because well, to hit a 10, jack, or queen, I know.
Yeah.
But like, really, you're calling, because most of the time it's this, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. So
you get to steal. It's a beautiful thing.
So this is an obvious must bet situation for Side and Streaker when we float the flop. And this card is, as I stated, a range advantage card for us.
Yeah.
Better for us board texture wise.
For sure.
How much we bet? 14.4 in the pot.
Okay, there's two things to consider here. One thing is just we want to bet enough to actually fold out like the ace highs and stuff like that. Like we really want ace 10 to fold.
Yep.
So we need to bet enough to fold out ace 10. The other thing we need to think about is at least threatening the shove on the river, right? Mm-hmm. So we want to size it in such a way, I think, so that way we can have like about a pot size bet back, give or take, to threaten, right? Because if we like bet too much now, I'm just aware of stack size. If we bet too much now and we get called, we'll put in like, we won't, like, we're going to have like half pot left or something like that.
I think there's a problem with that thought process.
Yeah.
And it plays out in this hand.
Yep.
In that Side and Streaker was thinking exactly that.
Yeah, I think he was.
And bet $3.5 million into 14.4 million. And that left him with about a pot size bet.
Yep. So I think he was doing exactly that.
Was it worth it?
Well, if he gets the fold on the river, it's pretty worth it, right?
Right, but how about getting the fold on the turn sometimes?
Well, he gets to win a bigger pot.
Like,
so there's some hands that will be insta-folds, even for $3.5 million, but not too many.
Let's do a little math, all right?
Okay.
So when he bets $3.5 million, and he does, and Woodsiak calls, which of course he does.
Of course.
The pot becomes $21.4 million, and Side and Streaker has $19.4 million.
Right.
What if he had bet $7 million?
Okay, good.
Yeah.
So now there's another $7 million in the pot.
Yeah, the pot's 28.4.
28.5, and we have 16.
Yeah, that's still enough.
It is. It's enough, but someone who's mathy as your opponent is going to make more calls. Now, they had to make more calls on the turn, though. They had to make the call on the... They're
right.
Making more calls on the turn when we bet small and more folds on the river when we go all in at for near pot.
Yeah.
Versus they make less calls on the turn and more calls on the river.
I guess... I really want to focus on how much that changes our fold equity on the turn.
Oh, yeah. It feels like we don't fold out very much on the turn at all.
Yeah.
The main thing he's doing, I think he's saying, if you call this, I'm probably shoving the river. Are you sure you want to do that? Think about it. You should just exit right now, buddy. It feels like that's what the conversation that he's
right.
trying to have.
Right? And I know that Woodsiak was not going to fold this hand for $7 million anyway, of course.
No, he's calling with this one. But the question is, what's he doing with King 10 and Ace 10?
Yeah.
Let's say King 10 suited.
I mean, I think he's folding for $7 million for sure.
What's he doing for 3.5?
He might fold.
I don't know. He might just give up with those. Ace 10, maybe it's a. Even Ace 10, I think he probably just folds for 3.5.
I mean, Ace 10 has a gut shot.
Oh, it does?
Yeah. There's a deuce, a 4, and a 5.
Oh, right. I was thinking the other way. Yeah. Okay. He probably has to call with an ace in his hand anyway. Maybe you feel like, yeah, Ace 10's calling no matter. All the aces are essentially calling no matter what, right? No matter how, if you make it $7 million or 3.5. So you're really just folding up the king highs. That's really all you need to do because you have queen high.
Yeah.
King high will fold for 3.5.
Yeah, I guess so. Maybe it's okay.
Maybe this is okay.
Maybe it's okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. Hard to say. Anyway, that's what he does.
Okay.
Woodsiak, of course, calls because you can't really do anything but call once you're here.
And at that price, you're like, okay, that's good. I thought this guy was going to bet like fucking 10 million. Like they often bet like pot or even over pot on the turn now, even in tournaments, you know, like this guy bet tiny. This is great. What a deal. Let's realize some equity.
So it's 9-5, deuce 4, full rainbow. There's 21.4 million in the pot. The river is the 9 of hearts pairing the top card.
Yeah.
It's a polarizing card.
Yes.
Woodsiak checks.
Yes.
It's a very obvious check.
For sure.
And I think this is a pretty great card for Side and Streaker to move in on.
He definitely can have a nine.
Yeah.
I think for sure he can have a nine. You think he might size up a little bit on the turn, but maybe not. Maybe this is just his sizing with this thing to do that threatening, and whether he's got a nine or a bluff.
I would hope so.
Me too. This is a good card to move on. This is a reasonable story he's telling.
Right. I mean, if there's some cards that are not a good story, right? Like if, obviously, if Wojciech made the straight and because the three came in, that would be a bad story for the most part.
I mean, you could have an ace as a side and streaker and shove.
I suppose you could.
It's pretty reasonable.
But when, we don't have to get into that because it's not what happened. But like, okay. What are you hoping to get called by? You'd have to just really get heroed super hard.
Yes. Well, I will say this. They say in the commentary that side and streaker has been moving in a fair amount.
Really?
And it sounds like not just like when they were heads up, but like throughout the final table. He's been like doing this a lot.
I see.
So if you actually have the ace, maybe you can move in and get called.
All right. So we think the nine of hearts is a good card to move in on because it gives us something to represent.
This feels like maybe the best card for us to move in on, like as a bluff, and the whole like a nine is better than anything else, right? Any like just weird overcard. I mean, if we hit a queen, are we actually moving in for pot? If he checks again?
I think that would be badass as hell if we did.
I think we can.
Yeah.
I think we can do it. So we hit one of our overcards, we can move in. But a nine is believable.
Yeah, it is.
This is a really bad card for Wojciech from, you know, from his opponent's range point of view here, right?
Yeah. So what are there any cards that you're not moving in on after you've like set it up with this pot size shove?
That's a great question. What can we move in on reasonably here? I think an ace is a pretty tough card to move in on.
Yeah.
Right? Because like when Wojciech check calls the turn, that small amount, it feels like he's got like ace jack a lot kind of a hand, right?
Yep.
And like, is he really going to fold? Especially we've been moving in a lot.
Maybe not.
I don't know. He may just hold on.
Yeah.
He probably holds on. Because how do we have a four?
Right.
Or a three. How do we have a three? We have to have, there aren't that many combos where we call the flop with a three and pre-flop with a three.
Right.
So yeah, I think we should not do it when an ace comes.
Is that the only card that you're not moving in on?
I mean, probably like if the board pairs and it isn't a nine, it's a little weird, but we might be able to move in with top pair anyway. We're heads up and it's just a pot size bet, right? We might move in with ace nine anyway or king nine anyway, right?
So
let's say the four pairs.
So you're the type of guy like Bryn Kenny where you're just supposed to close your eyes and call. Jonathan Levy is like Bryn Kenny. If you just heard Jonathan Levy's thought process, you just always close your eyes and call against him because he's moving in no matter what.
I'm thinking that this board is really good for us and we size it so small on the turn that we should actually be able to get a lot of folds on the river. If we size it bigger on the turn, it's harder to move in with the nine we can move in on anyway. But a lot of other things we probably can't because now he's saying I've got some strength. For $3.5 million, he's got a lot of ace highs here, right?
So that makes the $3.5 million a much more high variance bet than the $7 million if we're going to be moving in on most cards on the river, whereas we're not with the $7 million.
Right. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think it does.
Anyway, we're in a spot where a side and streaker definitely needs to move in on the nine.
Yeah.
Wojciech checks. Side and streaker moves in. All right.
Here we go.
How do you make this decision as Wojciech?
All right. Well, first of all, this is a bad river. There are plausible hands this guy has that would play just like this that are clearly ahead.
Yeah, and he's got a lot of nines in his range.
He's got all the nines, essentially.
And I know the combos got diminished by the nine pairing, but he still has tons of combos.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's hard to imagine he has any over pairs.
Yep.
Like, you think he's mostly four betting tens plus preflop.
Yeah.
I think if he somehow had them, he would move in on the river, even with the nine pairs, when we go check call, turn, check river for pot size.
Yeah.
I think he moves in anyway.
Probably.
But I don't think he really has those in the range. I don't think he's moving in with like under pairs to the nine, over pairs to the five very much, like sevens.
That would be so cool if he was.
It would be fucking beautiful.
Yeah.
But it's hard to believe you can get called by things you want to get called by when you move in with sevens.
You're targeting specifically Wojciech's hand.
Or sixes.
Yeah.
Like, that's it.
Yeah.
That's not a lot. Or a weird ace high that is just super stubborn.
Right.
That feels like not a good plan at all. So yeah, mostly it's trip nines.
Yeah.
Plus.
Yeah.
Right? I guess there's a few full houses.
A few straights, ace three.
Ace three, there's pocket deuces maybe sometimes.
Yeah.
Pocket fours sometimes.
Yeah.
That's it, really, right?
Yeah.
For value.
But that's a lot of combos.
It's a lot of combos, but if we were just saying kind of move in and with on most rivers. Yeah. And this guy's been moving in a lot.
Yeah.
Now we have to ask ourselves as Witsiak, what aren't we calling? Not what rivers are we calling, what rivers aren't we calling? Because we're calling like a lot of rivers, right?
I mean, with this hand, yeah. I haven't done the thinking on this yet, but I'm really feeling like if once we do, I'm going to find this pretty high in our distribution as far as callable hands. If we don't think Science Trigger has any overpairs, and we don't think he has sevens or eights.
I don't think he does. And we would probably play our overpairs and our own nines differently on the turn. We're almost always betting those on the turn.
Almost always, yeah.
So we have to have worse than a nine to even get here this way, I think.
Sometimes we will show up with worse, okay, or with better, but
rarely, yeah. Rarely.
Yeah. Beyond that, we have a six, which does
good.
It blocks 6-3.
Yeah, I think you could say it's probably better to have 5-6 suited here than like pocket sevens here, right?
Well,
we also don't block. Well, I guess a six blocks us the gutter also.
Yeah, the blocking the gutter is not ideal.
Yeah, but having two sevens blocks more gutters.
Yeah,
and you don't block the straight.
Yeah,
I think 6-5 is better than pocket sevens.
Yes, I agree. It is, because
if we don't think he's moving in with eights anyway, right. 6-5 is better.
And we block fives full, which is a genuine concern. He could have played fives this way.
Yeah, that's right.
So that's good too.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think this is kind of a call.
I think we need our opponent to be pretty loosey-goosey move-in guy, though. Like, the tighter our opponent is, the less this is a call, right?
Well, yes. I agree with that.
To be really clear, like, if we think he doesn't have a lot of bluffs, we should probably not call with this hand when the nine pairs.
Yeah.
And the story is actually pretty good. He's actually telling a good story here.
Probably the best bluff catcher is ace-5, because we block ace-3 and we block 5 full, and we don't block any of the gut shots.
Oh, right. That's true. That's true. And we'd rather have, and us having an ace in his hand is like, if he had an ace in his hand, he'd be more likely to check that back anyway.
Yeah.
Right. So we take out some of the check backs.
Yeah.
You know, so there's just more bluffs.
Yeah. So I think there are better bluff catchers than this hand, but this is among them.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, we've got pocket eights, pocket sevens, pocket sixes, and,
I think I'd rather have this hand than those hands.
Yep, because we don't block as many gutters, right?
And we block fives full with this hand.
And we block the straight with the six in our hand.
Yeah.
Yep, that's all really good. So this is a pretty darn good bluff catcher.
And Witsiak agrees with that.
He makes the call for not his life, but for pretty much his life. He'd have 10 blinds left if he was wrong.
It's a damn cool way to win the tournament.
It is, in an extra $110,000.
Yeah. Yeah, cool.
Hallelujah. First time, no rehearsal. I say fuck the second take. 90s baby scratching on vinyls until the record break. Mr. One Night is all I need. No second.